Today on Bearing Witness, I want to be real transparent that we're in the middle of processing. But that tends to be the stance. That tends to be the position of folks in our community daily. We are constantly processing the new onslaughts and assaults to justice, to essence of being, to our own personage on a daily basis while dealing with all of the other things, including the aftermath and the patterns of the historical inertia in our country. Bearing Witness, part of the Racial Reckoning Project, is a reflective dive into the week's events unfolding in this season of racial upheaval and, we hope, change. I'm Anthony Galloway, Executive Director of the Arts Us Center for the African Diaspora.
And I'm Georgia Fort, an independent journalist.
Miss Georgia, when we check in today, I want to thank you again for your coverage. I know you are joining us, and our guests will be joining us from the road because you are out covering and doing diligence to Bearing Witness. So, Miss Georgia, go ahead and run it down for us this week, and of course, our recent developments.
Yes, thank you so much, Anthony. We learned that there will be a lawsuit in the case of Winston Smith. We know that he was killed by a federal task force, and there has been very little transparency in this case. The initial reports from law enforcement agencies was that he was a murder suspect. We found out later that that was not true. That was inaccurate. Following that, there were claims that Winston Smith had a gun. However, there has been no evidence that has been brought forth to really prove that to be true. In fact, the only witness that we know of, she was in the vehicle with Winston Smith when he was killed, and she says he did not have a gun. She did not see him with the gun. He never pulled out a gun. And, you know, that was something they mentioned a few weeks ago. The additional information we learned was that he had pulled out a cell phone and potentially had started recording on that cell phone. And so now the questions have been raised about where that footage is that was on his phone. The other questions that have been raised is, why is there, you know, this contradiction in information from the witness and what the federal task force is saying? So now with this lawsuit coming forward, we were told by attorneys that they're going to be naming every agency that was participating in this, not only the investigation, but also the death of Winston Smith, right? So they'll all be listed as defendants. And there were also calls from community leaders for Governor Walz to take the BCA off of investigating this, that there's some conflict between some of the investigators being previous employees of some of the people that they're investigating. And so with Winston Smith's case, it's very different than the other police killings that we've seen recently in our community, because there is no footage. And also because this was a federal task force that operates at under different rules.
You know, watching your coverage of the press conference, there was a couple of calls that were made out too, you know, in terms of calls to the president to get involved on a federal level, particularly because of who's overseeing this, the U.S. Marshals in this district, in this area. But then also too, I need clarification on this. I heard one of the members during the press conference talking about not just Winston Smith's footage, but being fairly confident that there will be or they're going to be looking at footage from around the area. And then there were also witnesses to it, correct?
Yeah. So the witness that we know of is the woman who was in the vehicle with mm-hmm. Winston Smith. And another thing, Anthony, I think people should know about the killing of Winston Smith is that he was approached by unmarked vehicles. And so put yourself in a mm-hmm. situation where, you know, a dozen vehicles that are not, you know, clearly police vehicles, right? Just a dozen plain vehicles surround you. What would your first thought be? Would you assume that it's law enforcement? You might think that These are people, regular people approaching you, attacking you. You know, a lot of different things could go through your mind when you're seeing people get out of unmarked vehicles, because you're not automatically going to assume that it's law enforcement. And so that is something to consider. That is very similar to what we saw in the case of Dalal Eid, who was killed less than a mile away from George Floyd on New Year's Eve or the day before New Year's Eve. And so, again, in this situation, what we know Minneapolis to be the epicenter of this global movement, yet and still, we are continuously seeing people be killed by law enforcement. And there have been little measures put in place to prevent this from continuing to happen. In fact, with Winston Smith's case, it feels in some regard that we've digressed because this is a case where there's no footage. And that was something that was common practice, I think, like 10 years ago for law enforcement to be wearing body camera footage for even their own protection, to have a firsthand account of what actually transpired during an interaction that may go wrong, right? And so because this is a federal task force, I think a lot of us learned from this situation that federal task forces don't actually have to wear body cameras. And that's something now that I think a lot of people are pointing to and saying, this needs to change.
I mean, to an earlier conversation that we had, you had brought forward, the fact that the sheriff's department, departments that were collaborating with the task force that even are trying to distance themselves from the task force for that reason, for the lack of body cam reason, despite the fact that they were participating in the first place and had to know. The other thing that comes to mind as you were talking is, being surrounded by these unmarked folks. I also heard one of the attorneys in the press conference that you were covering speak to the fact that they did not announce themselves. And it's part of what they're bringing forward in the lawsuit, that they have a duty to announce themselves as police officers or law enforcement, and didn't do it. Further adding to, the thought process around what happens in a bunch of vehicles surround you. I think it's important to pull forward an experience or a pattern that is experienced by people of color, Black folks in particular, around quote unquote citizen arrest or citizens taking on their own right to police the bodies and the experience of Black and brown peoples. I have encountered it throughout my life as well, of folks in community who take it upon themselves to try to determine what I should be doing or who I should be. I mean, we got to remember that this our recent psyches begins, for many folks, begins with Trayvon Martin and a quote-unquote citizen, trying to take it upon themselves to do what law enforcement said not to do directly. And so I can only imagine that going through the mind. I have been in tense situations myself where somebody assumes who I should be or what I should be doing and takes a threatening stance towards me to the point where I feel like I need to defend myself. In this case, we see that the witness is saying that he's pulling out a cell phone because the weapon that we seem to have now is camera footage. And so, this case is just becoming more and more disheartening the more data that we got coming in. I'm curious, what are the next steps from what you are seeing in terms of the case and in terms of this lawsuit that's being brought? Is it being brought on behalf of the witness or on behalf of Winston Smith himself? I missed that part of the live stream.
From my understanding, I believe it is on behalf of the witness. Okay. Maybe our guest can clarify that. But, whenever there is a case like this, it is going to be it's likely going to be a lengthy process. And so we are working to stay in communication with the attorney so that we can receive updates as they happen in following this. But, Anthony, the biggest thing with the Winston Smith case, I think that we should really all be asking ourselves is, why has the head of the federal task force here in Minnesota not made a statement about this? Mm-hmm. And why is there a lack of evidence, right? The claims that Winston Smith shot Michelle Gross, the president of Communities United Against Police Brutality, pointed out that there was no testing done on Winston Smith's hands. You know, if you pull a trigger, you would have gunpowder, you would have residue on your hands. And so that would be very valuable evidence to prove their claims. And so the fact that that evidence is not there, there is absolutely nothing to corroborate their claims that Winston Smith shot at them. In fact, what we've been seeing in this particular case is a pattern that the things that they're saying turn out to not be true. People should really be asking questions and asking for transparency in this case, because it is very concerning that we are just 1 year, you know, post George Floyd. And here we are with this situation that it appears they're trying to have this go under the radar. And it's very concerning.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, created and supported by Ampers, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. And again, timing, this season that we are covering has a very... the timing has been a very important thing. Right now, we are coming up on we have just passed the end of a special session to which we have seen many of the things that we were hoping to be passed in terms of reforming police. We fell quite short. They've reached an agreement on a budget deal that's going to be signed by the governor. But I know many folks are seeing, and this just underscored by the Winston Smith case, that we aren't seeing the legislative reforms that we wanted to see. And we had hoped that this momentum would put in front of us. We heard Representative Carlos Mariani disheartened about the things that were left onto the table in that regard as we move forward. It continues to be a negotiation for something we see clearly as a problem, at least in the communities who are affected. I want to bring in our guest now, who from the Minnesota Justice Coalition, Jonathan McClellan, to talk more about not just what we've been discussing already, but of course, he's been the Minnesota Justice Coalition and Jonathan himself has been doing major work with on the legislation around this work. And so we want to bring in some of that perspective. So, Brother Jonathan, you've been listening to our conversation. So what's coming up for you as you've been listening to us put together some of these patterns and some of this information?
One of the things that came up is after the murder of Winston Smith, I reached out to some of my counterparts in Washington, D.C. to inquire about the use of body camera footage and what is being done federally around those areas and to try to get a feeling of what how people are feeling about it at a federal level. And I was told that there was a bill, H.R. 1163, in Congress that has been introduced to require all federal law enforcement officials and to be armed with body cameras when they're out dealing with the public. But I was also made aware that the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, House File 1280, which passed in Congress, also had that provision in there as well to require body cameras to be worn by all federal officials. I think that in light of what we're hearing and what we're seeing, like I stated in the press conference, if it looks like a duck, it sounds like a duck, it's a duck. And what we have here is we have a cover up. This didn't happen in a vacuum. We've had plenty of reports and history with these defunct task forces that have been put together with the federal government, such as the gang strike force that was consistently violating the law. And here we are again. Now we have another task force that has taken the life of Winston Smith. And this time we have a witness to it. And we also have a real live cover up. The governor came out and said in a conversation that we had, as well as in his public statement, that he's been in contact with the White House to try to get information, and they're stonewalling him. So if they're going to stonewall the governor of the state of Minnesota, you can only imagine what they're doing to the public. And well, all we want is accountability and transparency, and we can't have reconciliation without that. So if we're to have any type of progress, it has to be start with transparency and accountability. And that's what I have to say on the Winston Smith case going on right now that I can get into.
And Jonathan, I know that you were very involved in presenting and pushing 8 pieces of legislation surrounding police accountability. Now, during the special session, it sounds like some of those bills went through, but not all of them. For people who have not been as leaned in and following the legislation piece, could you kind of give a quick overview of what was presented, what made it through, and how you and your colleagues feel about the pieces of legislation that didn't pass?
Yes. So at the beginning of the session, what happened was during the special session last year in 2020, a lot of us, our organizations got together and put our heads together and found out what we all were working on. And we decided to form a partnership to advance these reforms and try to make this change happen, not just in the minds, but also in the policy. And so some of those pieces of legislation that we were pushing was ending qualified immunity, access to body camera footage within 48 hours, and ending the statute of limitations on wrongful death, ending no-knock warrants, police professional liability insurance, ending police-only responses to mental health calls, civilian oversight strengthened, ending prosecution for reporting police misconduct, and creating an independent investigatory and prosecutory body. Out of all these pieces of legislation, the only piece of legislation that made it in this current legislation was a watered-down version of ending no-knock warrants. And that's all that made it. The police passed some legislation that increased penalties for individuals who assaulted cops. And this was a real upsetting time for us when we were down at the Capitol. They made it so if one of those bystanders would have pushed Derek Chauvin off of George Floyd, and Derek Chauvin would have got injured in any kind of way, they're facing a mandatory 10 years to 25 years in prison, with a mandatory 10 years. They also got anti-doxing legislation that makes it, I don't know if people don't know what anti-doxing is. It's when you might have a profile on social media that may be fake and you find out who it is, or somebody in the community does something and people go around and they say, we need to find this person and who they are, who committed this wrong. And if the individual did not want their information to be public, now it's a crime to make that information public. And that's another thing that they got. They also got funding for body cams. They got other grants for local cops. They got $1 million for a violent and for a crime force, a task force. They got more money for the DNR agents, for body cams. And they got a special carve out for that assaulting cops, judges, prosecutors. And then they got law enforcement salary increases. And the people got the short end of the stick. We did get the Hardell-Sherrill Act, which reforms how service is given in the jails. We got a watered down no-knock bill, which really doesn't do nothing. We got the post board money for training for Alzheimer's and dementia training. And then we got the Philando Castile training and funding. And then we got Travis's Law, which requires that dispatch send joint partners for mental health issues. And then we got some form of asset forfeitures as well. And none of this legislation that passed includes any police accountability legislation. One of the big pieces of police accountability legislation that we were pushing was ending the statutory limitations on wrongful death. The statute of limitations is currently 3 years. And what this bill that we were pushing would allow the families, it gave a 5-year period for families to bring forward a case. And we couldn't get that. And primarily when we met with the governor and we met with the Speaker of the Senate, these were the issues that they were pushing. And we thought that we had moved the needle on these on those issues, but we didn't. Kobe's Law, which is releasing body camera footage within 48 hours to the family. Keep in mind, this isn't to the public. This is to allow the family to view what happened to their loved one. This is a piece of legislation that was written for Kobe Heisler. His mom had to wait almost a year to look at the footage and find out what happened to her son. And she was trying to work with them, trying to see the body camera footage. And this is something that you hear. When I wrote that piece of legislation, it was a common thread that you were hearing throughout all the cases, was the releasing of the body camera footage and how the clock is ticking. And to keep in mind, right now, there's only a 3-year statutory limitations. So while you're trying to grieve, while there's false narratives put out about your loved one, and you're trying to correct those and everything else that's going on, the clock is ticking. Another thing is that we are also finding that law enforcement intentionally botches these investigations. They lose evidence. On one of the cases, there was a Freedom of Information Act request put in, and two of them, and specifically asking for any type of body camera footage, video, audio, dash cam video, and they said that there was none. And you fast forward 11 years later, we got in contact with an outfit out of Hollywood who put in a Freedom of Information Act request for a press request. And sure enough, a body camera footage emerged out of that. Mm. And the statute of limitations is expired, so they can't bring that case forward. And this is what they're doing. It's similar to what they did with Winston Smith, where here it is that they're making the claim that he had a weapon and that he fired a weapon, and they don't test his hands for that for residue. They wash his body and then it's done. And this is the type of intentional botching of these investigations, these cover-ups that happen with these agencies that are supposed to be investigating law enforcement. And this is what some of the stuff that we're pushing back. We believe that there needs to be accountability, transparency, so that these victims can get justice, because the families will never get justice, because we can't bring back the loved ones that were murdered and killed by killer cops. But what we can do is we can push legislation to provide this accountability and transparency. And where we see the pushback from law enforcement is the pillars that police officers typically run behind and hide when they kill somebody. And that's just wrong. It is.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, with special guest Jonathan McClellan. Created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org.
You know, we've seen you work so tirelessly in the community to bring forth change, specifically surrounding police accountability. And some folks would be discouraged by the fact that there were so many pieces of legislation that did not pass. And, you know, the political aspect of how all of this stuff works. And, you know, then now you had to get into backing a candidate in order to flip the Senate and, you know, all of these different strategies that you have had to pivot to in order to bring about the change that you want to see in the community. And so I'm just curious, what is it that keeps you moving forward with this advocacy and this work, and how is it that you don't get discouraged? What is it that keeps you in this fight and keeps you pressing forward despite all of the obstacles and the fact that we're continuing to see Black men in our community killed by police?
Yes, I started this over 15 years ago. I've been pushing legislation back during the Pawlenty administration when I was brought into it from other political leaders who taught me the ropes and showed me how to advocate, how to build relationships, and how to take my understanding to that next level. And here I am today, and I have a family. And when I think about my own children and I think about generations before me and in the 1960s and 70s and what happened after the murder and assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King when they specifically targeted our leaders. And I don't want my children to have to face the same challenges that we face today. It's my job as a man, as a Black man, to stand up for my kids and all of our children's futures. And it needs to happen in our time so they can go on and live a carefree life, whatever they can. And I think that that's kind of the general sentiment for a lot of other people out here is that, you know, it's our duty to make sure that our children don't suffer the way that we're suffering now, to make sure that little Black boys and little Black girls live in peace and be happy and not worried about being killed by the police. And where race isn't an issue. And so we're gonna continue fighting. And I think that that's what keeps me grounded. And that's what keeps me pushing ahead is that fight for our children. It's for our future.
I know that folks in my community have seen you in the press conferences. They've seen you put these and so clearly put on the table what some of the legislative mechanisms are that we want to pull in order to address this concern within communities of color.
When I founded the Minnesota Justice Coalition, I saw different advocacy organizations coming from all different areas, but there was one area where I wasn't seeing enough advocacy. And boots on the ground, and that was in the legal community and in the court system. So I founded the Minnesota Justice Coalition to pull in legal tacticians to be able to utilize their skills to fight and be a part of this movement.
Thank you, Jonathan McClellan, founder of the Minnesota Justice Coalition. And I'm going to kick it over to Ms. Georgia to end, as we always do.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This is Bearing Witness.
This has been Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, a part of the Racial Reckoning Project, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Programming on this station is supported in part by Minnesota Department of Health.
Hi, my name is Yolanda, and I work in quality assurance for a medical device company. Vaccines are like protection for your body and also people. It also teaches the body how to defend itself. So just like you would drive a car, you have to both be offensive and defensive. Talk to your doctors, talk to your pediatricians, talk to your nurses about what this vaccine could do. We've learned, even in separation, that we need each other. So I love the fact that I can get back with my friends, my family, my extended family, and you just don't know how much I appreciated that.
COVID vaccines are safe and effective. More information about the COVID vaccines, including how to find a vaccination site near you, is online at vaccineconnector.mn.gov.